You're there in 2 Samuel chapter 24, and we are going to be doing a, basically answering Bible contradictions. And the first three sermons that I did was on a list that atheists put together. So it was on atheist.org was this list of 15 different so-called contradictions. This is 101 Bible contradictions by some Muslim. So it's like on this Islam site. And that's the big thing with Islam is they want to say, well, the Bible has all these contradictions and, you know, the Quran doesn't have any contradictions or whatever. They're trying to claim that the Quran doesn't have contradictions, the Bible has contradictions. So they have this list of 101. And this could very well be a very short sermon because I don't know how long it's going to take me to go through these. I may breeze through these because I'm going to do 12 of these. But some of these are really easy, some that we've already gone through before. But I'm going to go through every single one of these. And I want you to know that every single one of these has an answer. And most of these are, and when I say, I'm not going to go through 101 tonight. I'm going to go through 12, okay? But this first one, I've heard people use this argument. And the first one that's on the list, it says, who incited David to number Israel and Judah? Okay? Well, in 2 Samuel chapter 24 there, we see in verse 1, it says, and again, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he moved David against them to say, go number Israel and Judah. Now go to 1 Chronicles chapter 21. So basically a lot of these are so, you know, you'll find they're like, well, in 1 Samuel says this, or 2 Samuel says this, and then in Chronicles it says this. In the Kings it says this, and then in Chronicles it says this. And this is where they're all like basically misunderstanding what's being said in a lot of these cases. So we're going to be getting into Numbers. We're going to be getting into just different things that are being said. And so their question is, All right, did the Lord, you know, cause David to number the people, or did Satan cause David to number the people? And notice what it says in 1 Chronicles chapter 21 and verse 1. It says, and Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel. So, did the Lord do it or did Satan do it? And that's their like, oh, this is a contradiction. Well, let's keep reading here just because I want you to see this side of the story. Because obviously we just read all of 2 Samuel chapter 24, but just to get context here as far as what we're dealing with. Verse 1, it says, and Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel. And David said to Joab and to the rulers of the people, go, number Israel from Beersheba even to Dan, and bring the number of them to me that I may know it. And Joab answered, the Lord make his people 100 times so many more as they be, but my lord the king, are they not all my Lord's servants? Why then doth my Lord require this thing? Why will he be a cause to trespass to Israel? Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed against Joab. Wherefore Joab departed and went throughout all Israel and came to Jerusalem. And Joab gave the sum of the number of the people unto David, and all they of Israel were 1,000,000 and 100,000 men that drew sword. And Judah was 430,000 men that drew sword. But Levi and Benjamin counted he not among them, for the king's word was abominable to Joab. And God was displeased with this thing, therefore he smote Israel. And David said unto God, I have sinned greatly because I have done this thing. But now I beseech thee, do away the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly. So same thing that you see here in the story, there's actually going to be two different contradictions that they're going to try to bring up. Actually, there's more than two. I think four of these so-called contradictions are going to be coming from this passage. So that's one of the big reasons why I brought up this passage and why we're reading this passage. So the first thing is that who caused Israel to, or caused David to number Israel? Well, let's look at this. It says in 2 Samuel chapter 24, that God was angry. The Lord was angry with Israel. So that's the first thing you got to realize. Okay, before anything's numbered, before David does anything, God's angry with Israel. So God wants to judge Israel. That's what's coming down here. And he moved David against them. Now, it doesn't say that he provoked David, did it? It says he moved him to say, go number Israel and Judah. And 1 Chronicles chapter 21, it says, Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel. This is basically, Satan's the one that literally provoked him to do it, but God allowed it. And you say, well, you know what? Give me a case where God would allow Satan to do something with a righteous man or make the righteous man do something, right? Well, go to Job chapter 1. Job chapter 1. Now, it's a little different, but here's the thing. David is a man after God's own heart. He's a good king and all that, but he allows Satan to provoke him because he wants to judge Israel, okay? Now, notice what it says here in Job 1, verse 9. It says, "Then Satan answered the Lord and said, Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made an hedge about him?" And that's what you have to understand, is that Job had a hedge of protection about him from Satan. But God took away that hedge. Notice what it says. It says, "And about his house and about all that he hath on every side, thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance and increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face." Now, God's not the one that literally is the one that took it all away. Notice what it says in verse 12. It says, "And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord." So he says, basically, you know, he's in your power. So God's angry with Israel, and he basically puts Satan, you know, David in the, you know, like basically he's having Satan have power to provoke David. Okay? And with Job's case, it's not like God obviously wasn't angry at Job. So it's not like, you know, it doesn't say that God or the Lord was angry at David. It says he was angered at Israel. And because of that, he caused Satan to provoke David to number the people. Now, the thing that you have to, you may have read this passage and be like, why is this a sin? Like, why is this a thing that displeases the Lord? And what you got to understand is that Joab didn't want to do it, but why didn't Joab want to do it? You know, they numbered the people, but why is it wrong? Like, why is this some big sin that's going to cause, you know, this destruction to come upon them? Well, go to Exodus chapter 30. Because what you have to understand is that it wasn't inherently wrong for David to number the people, but there was something he had to do if he numbered the people. Okay? And in Exodus 30 here, basically it's stating that if you're going to number the people, you have to give a tribute of a certain amount of money for each person that's numbered. So if you think about it, I'm going to read this to you and then we'll talk about it. But, you know, this is really simply this. Satan's the one that physically provoked David, but God allowed it. And the reason God allowed it is because he was angry with Israel and he wanted to judge Israel. And so he allowed Satan to provoke David. David, you know, basically messes up to do this. And I'm going to show you why, you know, David numbering the people wasn't inherently wrong, but because it wasn't executed you know, the way it should have been, this is why the judgment was coming. Okay? Notice what it says in Exodus 30 and verse 11. It says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, When thou takest the sum of the children of Israel after their number," so he's talking about taking a sum, "then shall they give every man a ransom for his soul unto the Lord when thou numberest them, that there be no plague among them when thou numberest them. This they shall give, every one that passeth among them that are numbered, half a shekel after the shekel of the sanctuary." A shekel is 20 gerahs. "And half a shekel shall be the offering of the Lord. Everyone that passeth among them that are numbered from 20 years old and above shall give an offering unto the Lord. The rich shall not give more, and the poor shall not give less than half a shekel, when they give an offering unto the Lord to make an atonement for their souls. And thou shalt take the atonement money of the children of Israel, and shalt appoint it for the service of the tabernacle of the congregation, that it may be a memorial unto the children of Israel before the Lord to make an atonement for their souls." Do you see anywhere in 2 Samuel 24 or 1 Chronicles 21 where any money was gathered by these people and given to the Lord? Now, the reason why, you know, Satan's provoking him is like, oh yeah, do this. But here's the thing. Let's say David said, yeah, we're going to take this money. What if people don't give it? Then you're going to have this plague on the land, okay, because they don't do it the way they're supposed to be doing it. So it wasn't inherently wrong for him to take the number. But this is why Joab, if you think about, why was Joab against this? Because he, do you think Joab wants to go and be like, all right, give me half a shekel, give me half a shekel, give me half a shekel? He's doing a census on the army, okay? Because notice that when he gives that number, it's about those that are valiant, ready to go to war. Here it says from 20 years old and upward, ready to go to war. By the way, I believe that's when you shouldn't be going into the army before you're 20. Okay, that's just my personal, you know, biblically speaking, you know, like going in before 20, you know, the Bible says 20 years old and older. That's when you should be going to war. That's a side note. But do you see that it even says here that you need to give this ransom for their soul, that there be no plague among them? And what happens? There's a plague that's among them and kills 7,000 people, right? So that being said, is that it wasn't inherently wrong, because there's another place where they number the people. I mean, the book of Numbers, they numbered them twice, right? In the book of Numbers, they numbered them before they obviously spied out the land. They numbered like 600-some thousand. It was like close to 600,000 men that were ready to go to war. And then they went into the land, or they spied out the land. They murmured. They wanted the stone, you know, Caleb and Joshua. So then they wandered for 40 years. Then they number them again. So you look at Numbers chapter 1, Numbers chapter 26, you have them numbering the people. So it's not like that was wrong. But if you do it, you have to give the half a shekel. Imagine going up to someone that's poor and saying, you need to give me a half a shekel because I'm doing a census. That's why, you know, Joab, I don't think, wanted to do it. You know, he didn't want to be that guy, you know, that's like, hey, all right, I'm going to do this census, but everybody that passes through here has to give me half a shekel. And obviously there's a spiritual application to the ransom of the soul, and that everybody's, you know, the ransom's the same for everybody. I mean, you can definitely see a spiritual aspect to this, but in the end, it's really simple. Their whole contradiction is that, did God incite David to do it, or did Satan incite David to do it? And the answer is, Satan's the one that provoked him. God allowed Satan to do it because he wanted to judge Israel. He was angry with Israel, and he allowed Satan to provoke David to have a census, to do this count. And ultimately, you know, the provoking could have been very well too, that, you know, he was, you know, didn't know of this law, or was lackadaisy to see what he actually had to do, to the point where there would be this plague. So I hope that makes sense, but, you know, the idea of why this was a sin, why God was displeased with this, is because it wasn't done according to the law. And that's why, you know, they weren't just ready to do a census at all points. To be like, all right, time to number the people again. All the people would be like, you need to stop. I want to keep my money. Stop taking half a shekel from me. Can you imagine if they were to go take a census out here in West Virginia and be like, all right, we're doing a census on how many people are in your home, but we're going to need a half a shekel. We're going to need like $50 from every single person that we take a census from. Okay? People aren't going to like that. And a lot of people just aren't going to give the money. They're going to be like nuts to you. And then, you know, if you lived in Israel at that time and you didn't do that, then there'd be a plague on the land. Okay? And so, now the second and third, I'm putting second and third because they literally, the same type of so-called contradiction is listed twice. And one had to do with Israel's number, and one had to do with Judah's number. So when they took the census, go to I want you to get your finger there in 2 Samuel 24 and in 1 Chronicles 21. There's different numbers that are given. So here's our first numbers contradiction, okay? And this is where every word is important, and you need to understand some logic here. Some just basic logic as far as when you're dealing with a story that's being told and what makes it false or a contradiction or not, okay? We're going to go through this. By the time I'm done with these contradictions, you should have this in your mind as far as understanding that when someone tells a story, they can have two different perspectives with two different numbers and it all be right and all that. So in verse 9 here, 2 Samuel 24 and verse 9, it says, and Joab gave up the sum of the number of the people unto the king, and there were in Israel 800,000 valiant men that drew sword. Now go to 1 Chronicles 21 verse 5. 1 Chronicles 21 verse 5, it says, and Joab gave the sum of the number of the people unto David, and all they of Israel were 1,000,000 and 100,000 men that drew sword. Okay, so we got a different number, right? We have 800,000 compared to 1,100,000. 1,000,000, right, is 1,000,000, and then you have 100,000 on top of that. This is where every word is important, okay? There's a different type of category that's being mentioned here. Notice in 2 Samuel chapter 24 and verse 9, it says, and there were in Israel 800,000 valiant men that drew sword. And in 1 Chronicles 21, it says, all they of Israel were 1,000,000 and 100,000 men that drew sword. So the 800,000 is valiant men that drew sword, and the million is all of Israel that drew sword. Okay? And you say, wow, is there a difference? David's mighty men, case in point. David's mighty men, there was, you know, his 30 mighties and his top three that were above everybody else. You know, you had the other three, but they didn't attain unto the first three. So there were definitely mightier men than others. And it's basically stating that there was 100,000 valiant men that drew sword, but there were a million and 100,000 total that drew sword. Okay? But just some of the, you know, in that number, you had what? 300,000 that weren't valiant necessarily. Now, the next one, you know, number three contradiction, is dealing with Judah. In 2 Samuel 24 and verse 9, it says, the men of Judah were 500,000 men. And then in 1 Chronicles 21 verse 5, and Judah was 410,000 men that drew sword. Now, when I go through this, I want you to try to figure it out before I say it. You know, in your mind, you don't have to say it to me. But when you see this, do you see something different that's being said? It says there's 500,000 and then there's 410,000, which would be 70. So you have 500,000 over here and then you have 470,000. So you have a smaller number. So we already saw that, hey, maybe that smaller number has to do with a certain group out of that bigger number. And there is. Because in 2 Samuel 24, it says the men of Judah were 500,000 men. That's the men total. That's total. 20 years old and upward are 500,000. But then it says in 1 Chronicles 21, Judah was 410,000 men that drew sword. Not all the men in the army drew sword. You know, you had 30,000 that maybe were archers. Or whatever the case may be. I don't know. You know, maybe they drew spear. But you see how silly that is to just kind of, it doesn't say it exactly like that. And ultimately, when you're taking numbers like that, I'll just give you, that's what I believe it's saying. It's basically giving you different like groups of people and the numbers different because it's just like if you were dealing with the army today. If I said, how many people are in the army? The first question you're probably going to ask me, well, which branch? You know, or I guess military service, right? Because you say, well, is it the Army? Is it the Marines? Is it the Navy? Is it the Air Force? And then you'd have subsets within that. You got the Navy SEALs, you got the Rangers, you got all these different things that you could say the Special Ops. You know what? The Coast Guard. You know, you have all these different branches. So if I said there's 500,000 people in the Army or something like that, or in the military, but then over here they say, well, there's a million. I have no idea how many people are in. That number could be completely bogus and like you're out to lunch on how many people are in the army. It's not the point. The point is that you could both say that and both be right, but you're talking about two different groups of people that you're trying to number. One could be talking about this holistic like military, this is all the people we have in the military. Are you talking about people that are out on the battlefield or are you talking about people that are like in a trailer somewhere like playing a video game with drones? You know what I mean? Like, there's a difference as far as who, you know, one's a valiant fighter over here, the other one's like good at video games, you know, and is drone striking people, I don't know. So that being said is that you got to understand that when you're taking numbers, they could both be right just for the fact that, how about this? If I said that there were 470,000 men that were ready to go to war in Judah, would I be wrong? Is that a wrong statement? No. There's 500,000. But if I said there was 300,000, I'd be right. Now, here's where it would be wrong. There were only 470,000 men, all of Judah, that were ready to go for the war. But it doesn't say anything like that. So that's just like when you deal with, well, there are two people there, or was there one person there? Well, he didn't say there was only one, so it's both. You know, the one person just focusing on the one person. The other person said, hey, there was also another person there. So go to 2 Samuel chapter 24, and this will be the last one dealing with this passage. So you see that number one, who provoked David? Well, it only says Satan provoked him. It says that God moved him to do this. So there's two different things that are being done. God moved David to do this. Satan provoked him. Both are true. And then you deal with this number, and you're just dealing with different subsets of groups of people that are being numbered. And number four here has to do with, all right, is it 7 years of famine or 3 years of famine? So basically, God gives David three choices. And we saw in 2 Samuel, notice in verse 11 there, so 2 Samuel 24 and verse 11, it says, "For when David was up in the morning, the word of the Lord came unto the prophet Gad, David's seer, saying, Go and say unto David, Thus saith the Lord, I offer thee three things. Choose thee one of them, that I may do it unto thee. So Gad came to David and told him and said unto him, Shall 7 years of famine come unto thee in thy land? Or wilt thou flee 3 months before thine enemies, while they pursue thee? Or that there be 3 days pestilence in thy land? Now advise and see what answer I shall return to him that sent me." So he's basically saying, you got three choices here. Remember, David's like, you know, let me be in the hand of the Lord. That was his response. And he basically puts this pestilence upon him. So the thing in question is this 7 years of famine. Go to 1 Chronicles chapter 21. 1 Chronicles chapter 21. 1 Chronicles 21 verse 11. It says, "So Gad came to David and said unto him, Thus saith the Lord, Choose thee either 3 years famine or 3 months of to be destroyed before thy foes, while that the sword of thine enemies overtake thee, or else 3 days the sword of the Lord, even the pestilence in the land, and the angel of the Lord destroying throughout all the coasts of Israel. Now therefore advise thyself what word I shall bring again to him that sent me." So this one actually gives you a little more in, you know, as far as he chose the Lord. So this one shows you that that's what he's talking about. It's this pestilence with the angel of the Lord coming with the sword. So the whole contradiction isn't even, like, done. You know, he's just, that was one of the choices. So you say, okay, well, is it 7 years or 3 years? I remember hearing this so-called contradiction when I was in college. I remember, like, trying, you know, going through this with some of my friends. And like, all right, what does this mean? Like, how do you reconcile this? And so this one isn't new to me. I remember this one a long time ago. But in 2 Samuel chapter 24, it says, "Shall 7 years of famine come unto thee in thy land?" In 1 Chronicles 21, it says 3 years famine. So what's going on here is that over the space of 7 years, you're going to have a three-year, like actual time of 3 years of famine. Okay, meaning that when you have a famine, that doesn't just affect that 1 year. That affects more than a year. It's going to affect maybe 2 years of your crop and everything, because it has to, like, rejuvenate. You have a famine. It's not like just the next year is going to be awesome. So basically what it's stating is that this famine is going to come upon, like, for 3 years of time, you're going to have famine within a seven-year period. Okay? That's what it's stating. It's not basically like it's just dearth from, like, the beginning of that 7 years to the end of 7 years. It's just that that's what's going on within those years, that you're going to have seven-year time, that you're going to have this time of, like, famines of 3 years, okay? So not that complicated, but it's basically just stating that the space of time these famines are going to take place is in 7 years. It's actually 3 years of, like, famine being pushed on the land within that 7 years, okay? So, you know, that one's not that bad, you know, like, but people have brought this up. I mean, these are ones that I've heard all the time. The David being incited to number the people, is it Satan or is it the Lord? I've heard that one many times. I've heard this one with the 7 years or 3 years. But it's a 3 years famine within a 7 year period of time. Okay. So a lot of times what you get when you get these so-called contradictions is you're getting more information. Right? Don't you see that if you just had 2 Samuel 24, you wouldn't know that Satan was actually involved in getting David to number the people. If you just had 2 Samuel 24, then you wouldn't know that, hey, you know, that's a certain amount of famine that's going on in those 7 years. Or you wouldn't know that, hey, the amount of people that actually were valiant men, or, you know, were the ones that, drawing sword, I don't think that's a word, drawing sword was, you know, this certain number. So you're usually getting more detailed information when you cross-reference these. They're not contradictions, it's just giving you more information as far as what exactly happened. What would have exactly happened in that 7 year famine, you know, that 7 years of famine? It doesn't say a seven-year famine, does it? It says 7 years of famine. So in the other one, it says 3 years famine. Okay, so I hope that makes sense. So let's keep going here. And number five is, how old was Ahaziah when he began to reign? I'm going to keep this one short because I've answered this one a couple times. But go to 2 Kings chapter 8. 2 Kings chapter 8. 2 Kings chapter 8. Is it 22 years old or 42 years old? So let me read to you where it says it's, you know, he reigned at 22 and 42. So in 2 Kings 8 and verse 26. By the way, Ahaziah is the son of Jehoram, which is the son of Jehoshaphat. Okay, so just to give some context where we're at in timeline here. This is the grandson of Jehoshaphat. But in verse 26 here, it says, 22 years old was Ahaziah when he began to reign, and he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Athaliah, the daughter of Omri, king of Israel. It says in 2 Chronicles 22, in verse 2, it says, 42 years old was Ahaziah when he began to reign, and he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. His mother's name also was Athaliah, the daughter of Omri. So which one is it? Is it 22 or 42? And my answer to this is always both. Because there's no contradiction, right? I'm not here to say like one's right or one's wrong. I'm here to say they're both right. But how are they both right? So what you have to understand is if you understand how old Jehoram was when he died and how long he reigned for, that means that when he died, he had to have been 22, not 42. Because he wouldn't... For him to be 42, I forget how old Jehoram was when he died, but he wasn't old enough to even have him as a child to be 42 when Jehoram died. Okay, but what happened here? I believe he reigned at 22. When his father died, he reigned. Okay, but something happened. Okay, something's about to happen. You know, something happened to where he didn't reign until he reigned at 22, but then he reigned again at 42. So go back to Second Chronicles 22. Go to Second Chronicles 21. So let's see something that's going on here. So there's some context going around that'll tell you that what I believe is there's a 20-year gap between basically where no one was ruling over Judah, and they were basically under a captivity of some sort, okay, meaning that they were being kind of ruled by other people. And is this really that out of the ordinary? Because, I mean, this happened all the time in the book of Judges. This happens in other places. It happens with Babylon eventually, you know, where they basically don't have anybody ruling for a little while. But this is a little gap in time where basically Ahaziah reigned when he was 22 years old. Then, you know, basically his reign was ended, and then it started back up at 42. And if you know the story, he dies because Jehu comes into the picture, okay? So he doesn't have very much reign when he starts at 42. But in 2 Chronicles 21 and verse 16, it says, "Moreover, the Lord stirred up against Jehoram the spirit of the Philistines and of the Arabians that were near the Ethiopians. And they came up into Judah and brake into it and carried away all the substance that was found in that king's house and his sons also and his wives, so that there was never a son left save Jehoahaz, the youngest of his sons. And after all this, the Lord smote him in his bowels with an incurable disease." So we have here that, you know, there's two things that could be happening here. The Arabians have a big part of this. Notice what it says in 2 Chronicles 22:1. Because we have that the Arabians are coming in, the Philistines and the Arabians are coming in. They break into Judah, right? And they take all this. They kill all of his sons except for one, which I believe is Ahaziah, which just has a different name here, Jehoahaz. But in verse 1 of 2 Chronicles 22, it says, And the inhabitants of Jerusalem made Ahaziah, his youngest son, king in his stead, for the band of men that came with the Arabians to the camp had slain all the eldest. So Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram of Judah, reigned. 42 years old was Ahaziah when he began to reign. So do you see something that's going on here? That basically, because of this basically Arabian and Philistine captivity, if you will. They carried away the substance. They took away the king's sons, and only one was left, the youngest one, that basically he reigned at 22, but then they were basically carried away, and the people took Ahaziah, because he was the only son left, after that, and had him reign when he was 42. So I believe there's this gap of time where he reigned at 22, but then all this stuff went down, went south, right? And probably, it said he reigned for 1 year, okay? And the fact is that I believe he reigned for 1 year, and during that year is when all this stuff hit the fan, and he could have been a co-regent with his father. His father dies, and all this stuff goes down with his brother. All his brothers are killed, but only he's left alive. And then after 20 years, Judah's like, well, all this stuff happened. Now we're going to bring back Ahaziah and have him reign at 42. And then everything goes down with, he only reigns for 1 year because then Jehu comes in and takes him out. Okay. So that's one of the hard, because usually you have co-regency. And a lot of these we're going to see with is that basically when the ages are different as far as when the kings reigned, it'd be like, well, he reigned at 8 or he reigned at 18. They're both right. It's just the fact that when he was reigning at 8, his father was still alive. And when his father dies, I'm getting ahead of myself because there's other ones that are like that. But a lot of those you can answer with co-regency. This one's harder because you can't answer this with co-regency because his father wouldn't have been old enough for him to be 42 when he died. Okay, that's the problem with this being co-regency. I believe there's something going on with basically there's this gap in time where no one's reigning over it. So he reigns at 22, no one's reigning, then he reigns again at 42, and then it goes on from there. And you had Jehu, and you remember Athaliah and all that stuff and everything that happens after that, okay? Now, next one. So that was the fifth one. I already answered this one. I just answered it to you. All right, so number six is Jehoiakim. How old was he when he reigned? So I just answered this, but let's go over it again. 2 Kings chapter 24 and verse 8. 2 Kings chapter 24 and verse 8. I thought I had this in my notes, but there's like 101 of these, so I can't remember which ones I even put on this sheet to go over with you. Because I was kind of going through them all just to make sure, like, hey, I got a good answer for all this, and if maybe there's one I need to study out more to make sure I have a really good answer for or something. 2 Kings chapter 24 and verse 8, it says this. Jehoiakim was 18 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned in Jerusalem 3 months. And his mother's name was Nehushta, the daughter of Elnathan of Jerusalem. Now go to 2 Chronicles 36. 2 Chronicles 36 and verse 8. Actually, just go to verse 9. 2 Chronicles 36 and verse 9. It says, Jehoiakim was 8 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 3 months and 10 days in Jerusalem, and he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. So here's the typical, how old was this king when he began to reign? And, Brother Anthony knows this for sure. When we were doing that chart over there, that it gets a little difficult because you have co-regencies going on where the father's still alive, and then so you'll see that he reigns for this time in one place and reigns for this time in another place, and you're like, well, where does that cutoff come? Because you're trying to basically give a distinction between one king and another, but there's overlap. Now, I'm going to give you a great example of this. Go to 2 Kings chapter 8 and verse 16. That there is a clear co-regent. What does it mean, co-regency? Meaning that you have two people that are reigning at the same time. You have a father and a son that are crowned king, but really, in a lot of cases, the father's still reigning. It's just that when he dies, the other one takes his place. But it could also be that the one king can't do the duties, and the son has to step in even though the father's still alive. Okay, so you basically have someone that's kind of king in name only, if you will. But here's a clear example is Jehoshaphat and Jehoram. Notice what it says in 2 Kings chapter 8 and verse 16. And in the fifth year of Joram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, Jehoshaphat being then king of Judah, Jehoram the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, began to reign. I mean, you don't get any clearer than that. Jehoshaphat, being king of Judah, That's when Jehoram started to reign in Judah. So you have this overlap that's going on. So what happened with Jehoiakim? He was crowned king at 8 years old. He didn't actually start reigning without his father until he was 18. When he was 18, he reigned for 3 months, and then they had the captivity. Okay, and Jehoiakim's actually the one that, if you remember, you know, 37 years into the captivity, evil Merodach lifts him up and like has him eat at his table, and he actually has a very blessed life, you know, with that king of Babylon afterwards. But Jehoiakim at 18 years old, that's when he's taken captive. But he actually was crowned king at 8 years old. So you see more information, don't you? It's not a contradiction. It's just stating that he was reigning. He was co-regent with his father at 8 years old till he was 18. So that means there was a 10-year co-regency of Jehoiakim and Jehoiakim. So it gives you more information. Now, the other so-called contradiction is how long did Jehoiakim reign? So, and obviously the one that we read here, actually in 2 Kings it says 3 months, and in 2 Chronicles it says 3 months and 10 days. Now, this is why people don't believe the Bible. Well, which one is it? Is it 3 months or 3 months and 10 days? Well, let me say this. I'm 36 years old. Am I lying? I'm actually 36 years old, 4 months and 29 days. Well, which one is it? Are you 36 years old? Are you 36 years old, 4 months and 29 days? Come on, you're a big walking contradiction. It's so stupid. Okay, this same thing happens, which I don't think it's in their list, with David. David reigns for 40 years. It says he reigns 7 years in Hebron and 33 years in Jerusalem, but in one place it says 7 years and 6 months. Oh, it's a contradiction. I mean, I know with babies, a lot of times we're like, well, they're 18 months old and they're 36 months old. No, I'm just kidding. They don't do that. They shouldn't. If you do, you probably should be hit. I'm kidding. Don't hit anybody. But you know the month thing? I'm like, I don't want to have to calculate this in my head, okay? If it's like, well, my kid's 23 months old. They're 2 years old. Just tell me they're 2 years old, you know? Anyway, but that being said is that, you know, it's just giving you like to the T. It was like 3 months and 10 days. But if you said that he reigned for 3 months, you're not lying. Because isn't 3 months a span of time within 3 months and 10 days? Right? If I said he reigned for 2 months, would I be lying? If I said he reigned for a week, would I be lying? Okay, but it's silly on its head because that's not how we talk. You know, if you say, you know, he's, you know, 33 years old. Well, is he 33 years old to the day? And, you know, it's just craziness. Okay, so that one's just silly. So number 8, how many men did Adonijah kill at one time? Go to 2 Samuel chapter 23. So we're dealing with David's, you know, the chief of the captains. A lot of these are very, like, the same logic applies on how you answer these. Okay, especially when you're dealing with numbers, the same logic is going to apply. First of all, are there different elements being mentioned? Is it a different story? Is it, you know, like, these different things have to come up to say, would it be wrong to say that? So some of these have more than one answer, meaning like there's more than one valid answer that would answer these questions. And I'm not here to like say I'm going to like wrestle you to the ground and be like, my answer is more valid than your answer. It's just the fact that, you know what, it's giving us different information. It's not contradictory, though. In 2 Samuel chapter 23 and verse 8, it says, "These be the names of the mighty men whom David had, the Tachmonite that sat in the seat, chief among the captains. The same was Adino the Esnite. He lift up his spear against 800 whom he slew at one time." So 800 men at one time. You don't want to mess with this guy. There's a reason he's chief of the captains, by the way. I mean, who would you want to be chief of your captains? The guy that killed 800 people at one time. Now, go to 1 Chronicles 11 and verse 11. 1 Chronicles 11, verse 11. First Chronicles 11 and verse 11. It says, and this is the number of the mighty men whom David had, Jashbeam and Hachmonite. I believe this is the same person, just so you know. The chief of the captains. He lifted up his spear against 300 slain by him at one time. So which one is it? Is it 800 or 300? It's both. See, there's two explanations here. This could be two different times. He did it with, he killed 800 people at one time, but he also killed 300 people at one time. So it wasn't just this one-time event that he just destroyed people at mass. Okay? There's one explanation that you're talking about two different times that he did this. How about another explanation is the fact that if he kills 800 people at one time, and I said he killed 400 people at one time, is that wrong? If I said he killed 500 people, but here's the thing, if I'm talking about the same event, which good luck proving that, good luck proving that this is the same event. Because I can tell you right now that I believe it's two different events. You know, I believe that at one time, he killed 800 people at one time. And at another time, he killed 300 people at one time because he's a beast. I don't know, he just does, that's what he does. He's the chief of the captains. You don't want to mess with this guy. Okay, it wasn't just like this one time where it's just like, well, that was a fluke. They must have all just been on the side of a cliff and he just somehow pushed them off or something like that. No, this isn't a one-time deal. He did it more than once. Did it one time against 800 people. He did it another time against 300 people. But again, if you said that if you were talking about the same exact event and you said he only killed 300 people at one time and not 800, and then over here it says he killed 800, okay, that would be kind of a contradiction, right? Because you're like negating what it said about that same event. So it's silly, but do you see how is that easily answered? It's two different events. Prove me wrong that that's not two different events. I believe that makes a lot of sense. And the Bible, again, when you think about why you have four Gospels, when you think about why you have the Book of the Kings, right? You have 1st, 2nd Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings, and then you have the Chronicles. If you just wanted to say the exact same thing, give you the exact same information, what's the point? There should be more information or new information that's in these books. And that's what we find over and over again is that, oh, there's actually a little more information here. So when you put these things together, you're like, oh, okay, he killed 800 people at once and he killed 300 people at once. And then you see all this different information about these people. That's the whole point of having those two different sets of books, is so that you get different perspectives and you get more information. So that's number 8. Number 9. Now this one, I'm not going to really show you a bunch of Bible verses. I'm just going to explain this one to you because it's stupid. This whole thing is dumb. So they're saying, you know, that there's a contradiction dealing with David when he brought the Ark of the Covenant back into Jerusalem. So if you go to 2 Samuel 5, 2 Samuel 5, it basically states that David was anointed king, right? Then he goes to war with the Philistines. And I want you to see there in 2 Samuel 5, verse 17. 2 Samuel 5, verse 17, it says, but when the Philistines heard that they had anointed David king over Israel, all the Philistines came up to seek David, and David heard of it and went down to the hold. Chapter 6 and verse 1, it says, and David gathered together all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000, and David arose and went with all the people that were with him from Baal of Judah to bring up thence the ark of God, whose name is called by the name of the Lord of hosts that dwelleth between the cherubims. So basically, he defeats the Philistines in chapter 5, and then he's going to get this ark, okay? So what they're stating is that, well, when did he bring it back? After he destroyed the Philistines or before he destroyed the Philistines? So when you look at 1 Chronicles 13 and 14, it gives this breakdown. You have David is anointed king. Then he goes to get the ark from Gilead. And if you remember the story, this is where they put it on the cart and Uzzah touches the ark, right? And then he dies. And then they put it in the house of Obed-Edom. Then in Chronicles, it goes to the fact that he goes to war with the Philistines. He goes to the war with the Philistines, he destroys them. Then it goes to the account where he brings the ark out of Obed-Edom's house and takes it into Jerusalem. He dances, the whole story with Michael being upset about it. Okay? In 2 Samuel, it goes that he's anointed king. They hear he's anointed. He goes to war with the Philistines, destroys them. The next chapter, it says, you have the story of Uzzah with Obed-Edom, and then it goes into the story of him coming into Jerusalem with the ark. Okay, here's what it is. It's literature. And sometimes in literature, it'll give you the whole story about something that's going on, and then it'll come back and recap and go back through another story that's going on at the same time. Chronicles is literally going step by step. This is exactly what happened in the order that it happened. Whereas 2 Samuel is basically, the whole chapter is talking about him being anointed king, and it says when they found out he was anointed king, the Philistines went after him, and he's like, he destroyed them. Then in the next chapter, it's like, all right, well, David was bringing the ark back in, and first he had this snag with Uzzah and with Obed-Edom, and then he brought it in later on, like 3 months later. So 3 months it was in the house of Obed-Edom. You know what was going on during that 3 months? The Philistine battle. It's just the fact that in literature, sometimes it'll give you this course of events, and it'll back up and give you some more information about those course of events. You know this happens in Genesis 1 to Genesis 2. Genesis 1, you have the fact that he creates the earth in 6 days, right? You get to chapter 2, it says on the seventh day he rested. Then it says this is the generations of, you know, Adam and all this stuff. And it goes back to day 6 and gives you more information about day 6 where he's creating the Garden of Eden. And, you know, it said that he made man male and female in chapter 1, but then it gives you the story of how he made him male and female. And he's like, well, when did it happen? In Genesis 1 or Genesis 2? It's like, that's how literature works. It'll give you the synopsis, and then it'll kick back and give you more information. Or, how about this? Chapter 5 is talking about David being anointed king and being king. Chapter 6 is talking about the Ark of the Covenant and the story about the Ark of the Covenant. Chronicles is just literally boom, 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 boom. This is all that happened. And you have this mixture of like David being anointed king, him trying to deal with the ark, David being king going into battle, and then David with the ark again. And that's the actual outline of events that happened. So when that ark was in possession of Obed-Edom, he's destroying the Philistines. And then after he gets done with that, then he's like, all right, Obed-Edom's being blessed. We need to get the ark into Jerusalem. And then that story takes place. So, you know, that's a lot because I didn't want to read all of the story. That's really what it comes down to is that they're like, well, it's in chapter, you know, in this place, it's saying it after this. That's just how literature works sometimes. It's not wrong. It doesn't say that he went to war with the Philistines after or before he dealt with the ark or after he dealt with the ark or anything like that. It doesn't say like anything about that. It's just stating facts. It's just saying that David went up and did this. David went up and did this. It doesn't, you know, it's not saying that, well, in this passage it says the ark was brought into Jerusalem or brought into the house of Obed-Edom before he went to the Philistines. Or, oh, in this passage it says he brought it into the house of Obed-Edom after he killed the Philistines. Nowhere does it say anything like that. But that's what they want you to think it is, just based off the order of how it's written. Okay? So that was probably a little more complicated to explain, but that's just understanding how literature is written. They had that same problem, like I said, with Genesis 1, Genesis 2. You'll have these same problems in other places in the Bible, or just in literature itself, when you're dealing with how things are written. It's kind of like if you had a headline that there was this massive car crash, and then you start reading the story, it's like, it was a sunny day at 9 a.m., and there's, you know, nothing going on the freeway. It's like, wait a minute, I thought there was a massive car crash. Well, they're building up the story, right? Like, they told you what happened, but now let's go back and start from the beginning and see what's going on. Okay, that's just how things are written. Number 10. How many pairs of clean animals were put on the ark? Go to Genesis 6. I don't even know why I'm bringing this one up, but it's more so because I'm going through them all. So on the ark, they would bring them two by two, every animal, right? But then there was clean animals that they'd bring in by sevens, and there's a reason for that. Okay, they were doing sacrifices with these animals when they got off the ark. Can you imagine getting off the ark and be like, sorry, the lambs are done. the oxen are done. We just sacrificed them and, you know, did all these sacrifices. The reason he's bringing in more of a certain animal is because those clean animals were used for sacrifices. Okay. And notice what it says here in Genesis 6, verse 19. And every living creature of all flesh, two of every sort, shalt thou bring into the ark to keep them alive with thee. They shall be male and female, of fowls after their kind, and of cattle after their kind, of every creeping thing of the earth after his kind. Two of every sort shall come unto thee to keep them alive. So we see that it's very clear. This is how they're going to be coming on the ark. Go to chapter 7. In verse 1, it says, And the Lord said unto Noah, Come thou and all thy house into the ark, for thee have I seen righteousness before me in this generation. Of every clean beast thou shalt take to thee by sevens, the male and his female, and of the beasts that are not clean by two, the male and his female. Of fowls also of the air by sevens, the male and the female, to keep seed alive upon the face of all the earth. No contradiction. It's just stating that with the clean animals, you're taking more, right? Well, where do they say there's a contradiction? I'm going to read this, and I want you to see if you see any contradiction. And then I'm going to try to explain somehow how they're... I don't even know how they get a contradiction out of this. Genesis 7, verse 7. It says, And Noah went in, and his sons, and his wife, and his sons' wives with him into the ark because of the waters of the flood, of clean beasts and of beasts that are not clean, and of fowls, and of everything that creepeth upon the earth, there went in two and two unto Noah into the ark, the male and the female, as God had commanded Noah. Boom, contradiction. So what he's stating here is that he's talking about all the animals, clean and unclean, and he said they went in two by two. It wouldn't actually make sense if you said sevens, because there was unclean people in that list. Unclean people, unclean animals in that list. It is true that those clean animals went in two by two. Does that make sense? Does it say that there was only two of the clean? It doesn't say that. Listen, if you have sevens, then you're gonna have basically what it's stating is that you're gonna have 14 of that unclean animal that's going in two by two. You just have seven of each kind, right? Seven, you know, like of the each kind, but they're going in two by two, meaning that you're gonna have a male and female of each one of those that's going in there. So again, is it untrue that they had clean animals going two and two? Is that untrue? It doesn't say that there wasn't seven. So it's just really dumb, okay? Those type of so-called contradictions, it's not negating that they took seven, it's just stating facts. You know, how about they all went in two by two and then they brought the rest of the six two by two in after that, you know, that were clean. Maybe they only used the six for sacrifice and the other... I mean, here's the thing, though. Wouldn't there have to be two of the lambs that they didn't kill to reproduce? So when he's talking about the clean and the unclean, he's just talking about all the animals that are going to be fruitful and multiplying upon the earth and replenishing the earth. And you know what? But there's going to be seven of the clean so that they can, you know, use those for sacrifices. Okay, so no contradiction. 2 Samuel, I got two more, and then we're done. Two more. It says 2 Samuel chapter 8, how many horsemen did David capture? And these ones I've already answered, but I'm going to answer them again anyway. So there's one about the horsemen that David captured, and then there's the one about the stalls of horses, or stalls for horses. And a lot of you have probably heard this so-called contradiction. But in 2 Samuel chapter 8, verse 3, it says, David smote also Hadadezer, the son of Rehob, king of Zobah, as he went over to recover his border at the river Euphrates. And David took from him 1,000 chariots and 700 horsemen and 20,000 footmen. And David hewed all the chariot horses and reserved of them for 100 chariots. And 1 Chronicles, so we see that there's 700 horsemen that he took. In 1 Chronicles 18:3, it says, And David smote Hadadezer, king of Zobah, unto Hamath, as he went to establish his dominion by the river Euphrates, and David took from him 1,000 chariots and 7,000 horsemen and 20,000 footmen. David also hawked all the chariot horses, but reserved of them 100 chariots. So there's different information that's given here, or at least more information. One, you have 700 horsemen. The other, you have 7,000 horsemen. And why? Because it's talking about him smiting Hadarezer and dealing with recovering Euphrates. In 2 Samuel, you have 700 horsemen. But then in 1 Chronicles chapter 18, it's saying that he smote Hadarezer, king of Zobah, unto Hamath, meaning that he's going further. This is a campaign that's going on. And in one case, it's kind of stopping here at the campaign and numbering what he got. And in another place, it's going further and saying, unto Hamath, he got an additional horseman, didn't he? Like 6,300, to be exact, right? That he got once he took out Hamath and went unto Hamath. Okay, so again, every word is important, and you need to get context. You need to understand what's being said. And then the last one here is dealing with Solomon's stalls for his horses. 1 Kings chapter 4 and verse 26. Is it 40,000 or 4,000? And you know what? The New Versions actually changed this, and then they messed it up. By the way, this is not a translation issue. Okay? You're like, well, you know, in the original, it should have said 4,000 or whatever, and it says 40. No, this is not a translation issue. It's not like they didn't know how to translate the number. So it's a text issue, and they changed the text in a lot of these new versions, or they're getting it from Septuagint. It's probably the latter. They're just getting it from the Septuagint because Septuagint is corrupt, and they're basically taking it from that because it makes more sense to them. So in 1 Kings chapter 4 and verse 26, it says, and Solomon had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots and 12,000 horsemen. In 2 Chronicles 9 and verse 25, it says, and Solomon had 4,000 stalls for horses and chariots and 12,000 horsemen, whom he bestowed in the chariot cities and with the king at Jerusalem. Now, so which one is it? Is it 40,000 or 4,000? Well, again, you got to get the wording. In 1 Kings, it says that Solomon had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots. So he had 40,000 stalls of horses that were for his chariots. In 2 Chronicles 9, verse 25, it says Solomon had 4,000 stalls for horses and chariots. There's two different types of stalls that are being mentioned. He had 40,000 stalls of horses, meaning that he could have 40,000 horses. But he also had 4,000 stalls for horses and chariots, meaning that they were stalls where you'd have the chariot and the horses already attached to them, ready to go. Does that make sense? So you could essentially have 10 horses per chariot. And you know what? I don't know how many horses they put on a chariot, but they usually put more than one. You know, so, see how simple that is? You just look at grammar. It doesn't say the exact same thing, does it? It doesn't say in one 40,000 stalls of horses and the other one 4,000 stalls of horses. Again, if it did, it would still be easy to answer because you could say, well, of course there's 4,000 because there's 40,000. So he's not wrong. The only way that would have been wrong is if you would say there's only 4,000 stalls when there's actually 40,000. Okay, but again, you're dealing with stalls for horses and stalls for horses and chariots. So you're basically putting all the horses together with chariots, and then he has 4,000 stalls for that. That's number 12. And so we're going to be going through these and just kind of hitting all these again. Some of these we may go through really quick because if it's another co-regency one, we're just going to leave it at that. You know, I'm going to be like, co-regency, see my other sermon about co-regency, or if it's something like that. But there's some interesting ones in this list, but there's some really stupid ones too. And there's some where I'm just like, the reason I bring it up is because I want you to see that's why people believe the Bible's false. You see those 12 there? That's why the Bible's false. That's what they got. We already saw what the atheists had, and it was nothing. You know, these 15 ones that they thought were these heavy hitters, but they all fell flat on their face. And you know what? All 101 of these are going to fall flat on their face because the Bible does not have contradictions. The Bible's true. The Bible's accurate. And by the way, I'm talking about the King James Bible. So they may have, like, other verses and other, you know, I think one of them is, like, one of them is just because it's the wrong version. and I'll show you that. So it's not even something that I'd have to answer if they were using the King James Bible. But some of these do have to do with, like, well, they're using the wrong version. But I did try to pick a list that wasn't, like, pulling stuff from the Apocrypha. You know, like, as it says in Judith, like, well, that's why it's wrong. So that's the contradictions. We're going to go through those and hopefully have some fun with that. But let's end with a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for today. Thank you for your word. And just pray that you'd help us to know your word and to study to answer and to have an answer to every man that asketh a reason of the hope that's in us. Lord, just help us to know how to answer these. And if anything, that this would be a strengthening of faith to believers, that maybe some of these contradictions people had questions about, and this will strengthen their faith in the Bible. And Lord, we just love you and pray all this in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.